And this time on Culture File, the voices of the ancestors remastered. Bruce Flegg was an opera singer and actor born at the turn of the 20th century. He's perhaps best known for his Filch in The Beggar's Opera in a version produced at Glyndebourne by John Gielgud. But his otherworldly voice was also particularly admired by composers such as Vaughan Williams. He recorded frequently in the period, but most of his work until now has languished in a box marked Very Fragile in the childhood home of his granddaughter, Culturefile's Eleanor Flegg. But this winter, along with her father Aubrey, Eleanor has taken on the task of bringing Bruce's voice back into the world.
When my grandfather was a little boy, about 4 years old, he was sat on the knee of an old man. And the old man said, "You know, Bruce, when I was a little boy like you, I sat on the knee of a man at a piano." And he turned to me and asked, "Have you ever eaten or caught a trout?" And the old man, as a little boy, said that he had. "Well," said the man at the piano, "I've written a tune about the fish called Trout." He then proceeded to play the well-known passage from the Trout Quintet. And the point of the story is that my grandfather once sat on the knee of a man who had actually sat on the knee of Schubert. It's the kind of story that may or may not be true, but the dates work. My grandfather was born in 1900. Schubert died in 1828. So it's possible. I also like to think that maybe it had some influence on the career that he chose as a singer.
Lachen und Weinen by Schubert.
Lachen und Weinen zu jeglicher Stunde. Bei der Liebe so mancherlei Grunde.
It's more than 30 years since he died. And what's left of him? Some nice furniture, a large ceramic jar marked Leeches, and this, a box of records. 78 RPM, which is beyond the capabilities of our record player. It's a cardboard box marked Very Fragile, with a note in my father's writing saying, "Never leave on chairs." It smells of the cupboard and of furniture polish. Actually, the smell brings me way back. I want to have the records digitally remastered so that we can listen to them in the here and now. But there's more to it than that. I feel like I'm summoning a ghost.
I was going to say we're not usually barefoot around here, but we actually are always barefoot.
It's much healthier.
I can't wait. I wear flip-flops all day.
My father and I went down to Sheriff Street to meet Aidan Foley from Master Labs. Aidan, we hoped, could convert these records into a digital format and clean up the sound, but not too much.
How beautiful they are, the lovely ones who dwell in the hills, in the hollow hills. They have faces like clouds, and their breath is a wind that blows over summer meadows filled with dew.
Lovely HMV discs, aren't they, with the gold embossed label?
Right, yeah, appreciate
that. And a little terrier there.
So would these discs be early in terms of what you usually get?
They would be the earliest. I've done a few of this type before, but generally get stuff from the 40s and 50s would be more common. Without a doubt, 1936 is very early, and it was very early in the invention of disc cutting. And obviously it's before any type of tape machines or anything like that, so this was the only format used to record in the recording studio, so the vocal would have gone directly through the microphone, through the console, and directly to that disc. So it's direct-to-disc recording. The recordings were made in early 1930s, like 1932, and the recording equipment of that day, that was like during the Depression, and it was pre-war, during World War II, a lot of the technological and industrial developments happened, and tape machines and all the rest came out through that. So this was really primitive stuff. So it's remarkable the sound that they were able to achieve, and to be over 80 something years later to be able to reproduce it and have it sounding, you know, with still got clicks and pops in it, but sounding lovely and natural and complete.
I am a bird with my wings, and
For me, thinking about the person that I knew as an old man, my grandfather, and hearing this young man's voice, it's hard to connect them to the same person. When I see the photographs, I can see, yes, I recognize the face, but the voice is just almost otherworldly.
Talking of the immortal hour, I think the voice is meant to be otherworldly, and that would have been well within his capability to adopt a fairy-like voice. I had the opportunity to see him, hear him sing on a few occasions, and I remember one particular occasion in the Wigmore Hall where he was singing one of the great pieces of Vaughan Williams' piece, the On Wenlock Edge. And I remember an elderly gentleman making his way out after the interval, and I was indignant that this man was leaving, and I was told to be quiet because that was Vaughan Williams himself who had come because he particularly liked my father's treatment of this Houseman poem and the songs with the music of Vaughan Williams.
It's 2 weeks since I picked up the recordings, and I can't stop listening to my grandfather's voice. I love the immortal hour, that light tenor. It actually does feel like I was able to summon the ghost of the ancestors, and he would like that, I think. He was a great one for the ghost stories.
The voice there of Bruce Flegg, and you heard also from his son Aubrey Flegg, his granddaughter Eleanor Flegg, and his 21st century collaborator Aidan Foley of Master Labs.